Your Book of Spies is about a fictional book of spies that's part of what may be an actual lost library of gold that dates back perhaps many centuries. Do you think that this really exists?
I would hope it does. It's one of those treasure hunts that anyone who loves books would like to be a participant in. I mean, my goodness, when you stop and think about walls of books, of actually illuminated manuscripts, all covered in gold and each embedded with gems, the thought of being able to stand in a room filled with books like that is inspiring.
You had said you'd first come across legends of this library of gold back in 1989, more than 20 years ago. What made you hang on to this idea for so long?
Probably insanity. I was so captured by the idea that a library like this had existed at one point. And the last known owner was Ivan the Terrible. The library initially came from the Byzantine Empire. That was the heart of the imperial collection. And the last surviving heir to the emperor, who was dethroned by the Muslims, married Ivan the Great, Ivan the Terrible's grandfather. And when she went to Moscow to marry him, she took on carts and pulled by donkeys. The number varies, something like 100 donkeys carrying these carts that were filled with crates of books. And so the thought that they went from Constantinople, which is today Istanbul, then to Rome, where she was safe, and from Rome to Moscow is amazing to think about. These were priceless works that dated all the way back to the Greeks.
When I was in Ireland about a decade ago, I got to see the Book of Kells and see it up close. And all through reading this book, I was thinking of just that, because the Book of Kells, if you've ever seen it, is amazing. It's one of those illuminated manuscripts that's survived for centuries.
They're beautiful. They are actual works of art. And to think that the tremendous amount of work and effort that went into creating these masterworks is incredible. For instance, Ivan the Terrible added to his library of gold. And, in fact, the Book of Spies was one that he commissioned. This is a fictional work. The other books are not. And as one of the characters explains, it took 4 years to create this book. And monks would be sitting there during the dead of winter freezing and still working 12-hour days, six-day weeks. And during the summer, in those blazing hot summers with the mosquitoes and no way to stop them, and working late into the night with candlelight, it was an ordeal, a real act of love to create illuminated manuscripts.
You're not working quite that hard, are you?
Well, we do have computers these days, thank you very much, and I'm very grateful for them. I like the part where when I make a mistake, I can go back and fix it so easily instead of having to roll a piece of paper into a typewriter and use whiteout to find the spot and hope that I can realign the typewriter so that I can type the corrected word in. The good old days.
Obviously, you enjoy your writing, but it is your job. Do you have set hours a day that you work, either writing or researching, or what's your usual day like?
My usual day is one in which the work is foremost, and it is interrupted. It is interrupted to eat breakfast, to work out, to occasionally have dinner with a friend, also to go to doctor's appointments or something else. But if I make the day focused on work, then the others do become interruptions. I'm easily tempted. I like to go have fun. So if I think about my day as a day of errands or appointments, then that becomes the focus of my day, and I don't get a darn thing done on the book. So it's all a mind game that I play with myself.
Well, your new book does zero in on a couple of new characters. You've reintroduced your famed assassin, the Carnivore. And if you'd rather not talk about that, the wonder of digital tape is we can get rid of this question. But I'm curious why you brought him back.
Actually, bringing him back was my editor's idea. The Carnivore is one of those iconic characters that you create and you have no idea that you've created an iconic character. But he has such a high resonance with people. He's sort of a curiosity in the sense that he is a killer. But he has a wife, a child, a grown-up daughter that he's estranged from. The wife is now dead, and he's partially to blame for that. He longs to see his daughter again. He doesn't want to work full time, but he comes back out. He can be hired again if there's enough money involved. It's a minimum of $2 million for a hit, but then he always makes it appear to be an accident, so nobody ever is aware that it's an actual hit. And he has a series of rules that he follows. So if by combining all of these factors, he suddenly becomes this very interesting man who has not a complete ice block for a heart.
This was originally billed as the first book in a trilogy, but now it's going to be a series. This will be your first series. Is that bringing some new challenges for you, or is it easier?
In some ways, it's easier. I really wanted to have a hero and a heroine, and as it turns out, there'll be a couple of other characters too, including the carnivore, who will continue book to book. I actually wanted to find out what that would be like to carry characters over a longer arc than just one book. I'm sure other authors have the same experience I've had, in which, as a standalone writer, my readers would come back to me and they would want me to continue on with characters from various books. And really, I'd said all I wanted to say about them. I didn't have another story for them. But this time, I'm deliberately creating a situation in which I'm having several stories for these characters, and I'm seeing a long developmental arc for them. It's very exciting. The downside, of course, is that exactly that if one isn't capable of pulling it off, then one is going to end up with some pretty darn boring books.
That's not going to happen. you've included the names of some of your fans in this book, including one of the main culprits, Doug Preston, who is also a best-selling suspense novelist. Tell me a little about your motive behind having done this and that you weren't getting back at Doug for something.
That's hysterical. Well, Doug said, Doug's apparently, this is the story Doug tells us, that he spent $100 buying drawing tickets so that he could win the drawing to be a character in my next novel. And indeed, he did win. And he came up to me very excited. I had no idea he had done any of this. And said, I want, and I want to be the bad guy. So am I going to deny Doug? I mean, he spends all this money, and he's a fabulous writer and a dear friend. So, of course, he gets to be the muscle man in this book. And he's enjoying it quite a bit. He told me he's reading the book. There are about 30 other characters in the book who have names of my readers. And I know how important it would have been to me before I started writing to see my name in a book. And I thought that this might be a nice thank you to my readers. So on my website, which is www.gaillelinds.com, there is a place where you can sign up, and you have to promise not to care if you end up a mangled corpse or a villain or a hero, and you know that the description is not going to fit you, and you know the background is not going to be your background. You know that this character is not you, but it's simply that I'm using your name with that character. And if you agree to all of those, then your name goes into a pot, and as I am writing my next book, I'm slowly pulling names out of that pot that seem right for whatever character that I'm creating at the moment.